we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, August 31st. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my animal-loving vegan co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Today's show is brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people how the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is time for a plant-based economy because on our big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. On today's show, we have a feature interview with an activist from Tampa, Florida, Brian Brown, who is the entertainment director for Solutionary Events, a nonprofit organization which holds film screenings, veg expos, and community events, teaching people how to be better advocates for people, animals, and the environment, and of course, promoting veganism. He's also the president for Art for Animal Rights, bringing together artists in the community to spread the vegan message, as well as raising money for animal rights initiatives. On top of this, Brian is on the advocacy board for Florida Voices for Animals. Brian and I will discuss our shared animal rights activism philosophy that promoting anything less than veganism, such as vegetarianism or reducitarianism, is doing a disservice to animals. Today we're speaking with a vegan activist from Tampa, Florida. Welcome, Brian Brown.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm the entertainment director for Solutionary Events. Solutionary Events is a Tampa Bay-based nonprofit that holds community events, some bigger events like Veg Fest and Health Fest, all the way down to smaller events like film screenings and craft workshops and things like that, that help to teach people about how to do the right thing for animals and people in the environment. The principal way that we encourage people to do that is to go vegan. And I'm also the president of a very new Tampa nonprofit called Art for Animal Rights. We bring together artists in the community to either raise money for animal rights initiatives or just to spread the vegan message.
That's awesome. And so how and when did you become vegan?
I became vegan about 4 years ago. I just got involved with the animal rights world, and being vegan just kind of came with that territory.
And so you didn't begin as a vegetarian? You went straight to veganism?
I was a vegetarian for about a year before I went vegan. I decided that I didn't want to participate in factory farm meat and so on and so forth, but I didn't really understand that much about it. And it wasn't really until I got involved in actual animal rights activism that I start to learn that eggs and dairy are just as, if not even just as bad, if not even worse. So getting involved in animal rights was what made me make that switch to vegan.
Mm-hmm. And so beyond all that you do in your actual employed work, what does your activism look like outside of that? Do you join local groups or anything? You're in Florida, so
yeah.
The scene may be a little different there.
I'm also on the advisory board for Florida Voices for Animals. They do a whole lot of activist work for animal rights in the Tampa Bay area. And there's also lots of other animal rights groups in the area, down in Sarasota, down in Orlando. And we all work together to, we cooperate to put together vegan festivals and work on animal rights initiatives. Like in Florida right now, there's a really big push to get Amendment 13 passed, which will end greyhound racing in the state of Florida. So we're all working really hard on that.
Oh, I haven't even heard about that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a real big deal down here.
Well, we'll have to have you on the show again to talk about that one. But today you and I are speaking because
Until recently, I didn't know who you were, and you and I connected on Facebook over a post of a mutual friend who's vegan, but invites public discussion by having a sign on his computer that says, "Ask me why I'm vegetarian," when he's in public places. And his reasoning for this is that he feels it's less intimidating to say vegetarian than vegan, even though he is vegan. And he figures it may invite more strangers to come over and talk to him. So the ensuing thread of comments after he posted this picture on social media ranged from congratulating him on the creative activism idea to criticism from vegans for promoting vegetarianism when he works for an animal rights organization who many activists feel should be promoting abolitionism rather than baby steps or welfareism. And so I commented that we should stop acting as though the word vegan is a negative word because of how urgent this issue is. Animals are suffering by the billions every day, and it's affecting our health, the environment, contributing to antibiotic resistance, etc. So I feel quite an urgency. And I'm really not a fan of encouraging baby steps because, in my opinion, from all the people I meet doing outreach, many people who prefer this method, I feel, have very little intention of moving past the vegetarian stage. I see people stuck in the vegetarian stage for decades. And when you talk to them about eggs and dairy, I often get this fingers in the ears, heads in the sand kind of attitude. So I know that they've heard it before. And I think that they're just going, I'm doing my part, I'm not eating meat, and I can't give up my cheese.
Right, right.
And so I loved your comments. You write so eloquently. Can you share with our listeners what you said under this photo that was posted?
Sure, sure. So I wrote, "I used to think so, but these days I really don't. What happens to animals is essentially the top rung of the most awful things that can happen to someone ladder. And it happens because of the paradigm that we have the right to own and use animals for whatever purpose benefits us, with no consideration for their own agency. I fail to see how reducing consumption as a means of absolution, proportionate to how much someone feels bad for that, but still feels that for some arbitrarily determined amount of time per week or month or whatever, they have the right to pay someone else to subject defenseless animals to horrific torture and mutilation because they don't feel like eating something else. I don't see how that does anything to remedy that paradigm. Sure, some people find it hard. I honestly couldn't care less. It's not hard, but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's hard or not. The right thing, as opposed to a frankly absurdly cowardly and selfish thing, isn't determined based on factors such as convenience or palate preference. It's based on basic fundamental morality. In this case, paying someone to imprison and torture and stab an animal to death because we didn't feel like eating something else is plainly wrong, to make the understatement of the century. And making concessions like, it's okay to do that Tuesday through Sunday because maybe you'll eventually someday in the distant future decide not to do it at all, is going way too far in trying to be inclusive. I get that reducitarian or whatever does prevent some number of animals from being on the production line, and it hurts ag industry profit, which is, of course, a good thing. But that sounds like a job for the business world, not the activist world. Lately, as an activist, I feel like I'm being asked to be an unpaid marketer for Gardein instead of an advocate for real social change. That was my comment.
That's great. You know, I was speaking with a friend on the weekend who was in his regular coffee shop, and they spoke with another regular that they often encounter in there, and the topic of veganism came up. And my friend, who is actually a former Mercy for Animals undercover investigator, he was saying something in support of going vegan to this fellow who's not vegan. And the fellow said to him, well, everything in moderation, which, as you and I know as activists, we hear way too often. Animal cruelty in moderation, and they brush it off like it's no big deal. And this friend of mine, the former undercover investigator, he's very quick with the responses, and he always has the perfect thing to say. And he goes, yeah, like pedophilia, right? You know, everything in moderation. And the guy got really kind of defensive and said, no, that's not what I meant. And my friend just kind of smirked and said, well, I mean, think about it, right? And of course, it created a tense moment, but it was an opportunity, hopefully, to plant a seed in this fellow's head that it is as bad as pedophilia, and one is a social norm and one is not, and just because something's legal doesn't mean it's right. I heard a saying recently that the people who were hiding Anne Frank were breaking the law, and the people that went after her were following it. I thought that was a good example of morality and law.
That is a good example, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need to use that one a little bit more often when I get into these kinds of discussions. And so when I do vegan outreach, I often meet members of the public who proudly boast that they're vegetarian. So they'll be coming by what we're doing, and you can right away see that we're promoting people giving up animal cruelty, a thing that I do quite often. I'm not sure if you've heard about it, Brian, but it's with this fellow who was a former undercover investigator with Mercy for Animals. He sets up a diet.
That's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, he sets up a giant TV screen and speaker sound system, and he plays undercover footage, which is similar to what you might see in the Earthlings documentary. For our listeners that don't know that, please watch that online. But it's undercover footage taken in slaughterhouses and factory farms. And so as people are walking towards us in these public spaces, they can see the screen and you can see the reaction on their faces. And the ones that are vegetarian quite often go, "I'm vegetarian." And they put a fist in the air like, "Yeah, I'm already on your side." And I'm thinking, "No, you're not." And so I, of course, you have to congratulate them for that. But as they keep quickly walking by, you also have to try to get them to stop and go, "Can I talk to you about why I went vegan when I was vegetarian?" And, I'm just going to let you take it from here. Can you explain to our listeners who may be vegetarian why the vegetarian diet still contributes to so much cruelty?
Sure, sure. So I'll go ahead and excuse me just a second.
We can start with the egg industry or the dairy industry. They're both horrific.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and start with the dairy industry. I think we kind of need to really start with the fact that cows and chickens are really just like all other animals in that they're conscious and they feel and they suffer. We need to kind of understand that we're not so removed from them as we want to believe. You know, feelings like sadness and love and joy and especially pain are very, very fundamental and basic. We don't have a monopoly on love and despair and pain. You know, if you don't believe me, you can ask your dog, you know. I think I hate to start this on such an awful and an offensive note, but I feel like we need to start with rape. That's where this all starts. Cows who are not indifferent to the idea of rape any more than we are forcibly inseminated in a just grisly and violent process, all part of just standard operating procedure. And that's done so that the cow gets pregnant, as many of us are somehow unaware, mammals require a baby in order to lactate. After giving birth to her baby, she's overcome with love just like any other human mother. But from the perspective of any dairy operation in the world, there's a problem here, which is that the mother's milk is a product that's being monetized. So if the calf drinks it as it's supposed to do, that constitutes a business loss. So in many cases, female calves are fitted with a spiked mask that looks like something straight out of a Saw movie to stab the mother calf in the udder if she tries to drink from it. And male calves are most often just sent off to feedlots or veal farms. I don't think I need to explain how awful veal farms are, but I need to make it clear that veal calves come from dairy farms. If you buy dairy, you buy veal. They're inextricably linked together. When the mother and the calves are separated, just a couple of days after birth, they react just like any human mother and child would, screaming and crying for each other for hours and days, and eventually they just sort of resign into depression and despair. And then, as part of the business, the mother cow is hooked up to this crazy octopus vacuum apparatus that's extremely painful. And in these factory farms, she's just left to rot in feces up to her knees while the milk is drained out of her. And that's her life now. This process is repeated 5 or 6 more times while she develops mastitis, severe inflammation with sores all around her and her udders. until she literally just gives out and collapses beneath her own weight, sometimes breaking the bones underneath her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's literally dragged through the dirt to a slaughterhouse transport truck by a tractor. So, I want to make this clear. When you say, I just can't give up cheese, you're saying that all of this is fine with you as long as you get your slice of pizza.
Yeah.
So while chickens here, they don't have it any better. They literally, from birth, female chicks have their beak sliced off with a red hot iron on their first hatch. If they're female, if they're male, they don't have any monetary value at all, and so they're ground alive and basically what amounts to a big metal sarlacc pit. Female chicks, for the rest of their lives, they grow up to be chickens, but they're confined into a space that's smaller than a file cabinet drawer with four or five other chickens in there with them. They spend their entire lives in these wire cages with zero room to move. And after they lose their feathers, they get pecked constantly by their terrified cellmates. They develop sores, they develop neuromas, and oftentimes, because this is just a makeshift wire cage, their viscera ends up getting caught in the wire. Eventually, they just give up and die. And cage-free farms are not any better. They're just warehouses where chickens are wing-to-wing with other disease and fear-crazed chickens. They're constantly wading through other carcasses and feces. And if there's a general disease, the standard operating procedure is to drown them alive in this specialized chicken-killing industrial foam.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see, over lack of vegetarianism, it just doesn't cut it. If we're going to make a grand ethical statement, which we need to, about the paradigm which we see animals, that this is wrong, we cannot contribute to this, then we necessarily have to include dairy and eggs in those considerations.
Mm-hmm. And so we often hear from vegetarians when we're doing outreach that they buy their eggs from a local farmer or that they buy organic milk. And I honestly don't believe them when they say that all of the eggs they consume come from their so-called local farmer, if any. I know that people go to a restaurant and don't even consider where the eggs come from. But it brings up another issue, the difference between abolitionism versus welfareism. Most people have never heard these terms, which are often used in animal rights discussions. So would you explain the meaning of these to our listeners?
Sure. Abolitionism goes off of the principle that the paradigm that animals can be owned by us, the principle that animals exist for our benefit, that is the primary reason why we're having the problems that we have. Welfareism, on the other hand, doesn't really address that underlying principle. Welfareism generally goes off of more of a numerical approach. So can we save X number of animals by getting people to reduce their meat consumption, or can we make existing factory farms maybe a little bit less awful going from cages to cage free, or getting rid of gestation crates and so on and so forth. I think there's quite a lot of merit in that, but I really don't happen to think that that really does much of anything to actually do anything about the paradigm that humans can do whatever they want to do with animals, or that animals exist to be consumed or to be used in whatever way benefits humans.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed a lot in the news lately, and of course on social media, that veganism really is growing. And surprisingly, even amongst people that have admitted to me, they do not care about animal rights issues at all, which is shocking for someone to say, isn't it? I mean, I have a hard time believing it. Don't you?
I do, yeah. I do. I have a hard time believing it because I think that, basically, I think that where so many activists get a little bit bogged down, and I think that where many people who see activists also get bogged down is that, you know, we have this idea that people are, that their choices of meat consumption or of animal product consumption are some kind of a reflection on them, and it is indicative of, you know, whether they do or they don't actually care about animals or not. And really, I don't think it's quite so simple, because most of my friends and family, they are not vegan. And I wouldn't in a million years think that they don't care about animals or that it's a reflection on them or their character somehow. I think that what we're really dealing with here is something that's much bigger than who we are as people. I think what we're dealing with is a society-wide sickness that has existed ever since the dawn of civilization. What we're asking for as animal rights activists is really nothing short of a complete upending of a paradigm that's existed since the beginning of civilization. And we've come to a point in our civilization where, you know, we can just close our eyes to everything that happens to animals and just be presented with the end product on a golden platter. And we can very easily pretend that we don't care because we don't have to see it. But I really do believe that if you get people to really see what they're actually doing and what actually happens, then the dots will come together. It may not be fast. It may not happen all at once. But I really have a hard time believing that people really don't care, because I think that they do.
Mm-hmm. It is hard to believe, for sure. And I think if you honestly don't, then you've got some kind of psychopathic tendencies going on.
I think so too.
And I actually, you know, back to what we initially were talking about, I actually have a personal success story on how an activist encouraged me to skip past the baby steps and go straight to veganism. So a few years ago, before I was vegan, I was watching the news and saw an undercover investigation by Mercy for Animals, which took place at a Brampton, Ontario's Maple Lodge chicken slaughterhouse. And the video revealed plastic crates of live chickens being carelessly unloaded from a transport truck. And imagine this, it's in an Ontario winter, so very cold. And workers were pulling the chickens out of the crates, many of them dead and frozen from transport. And I actually now think, well, lucky them, because they missed the next step. And, you know, many of the live ones had broken feet, legs, and wings. And the workers had to hang them upside down by their feet in shackles on a fast-moving processing line, where they were taken next to an electrified bath. And picture them, you know, thrashing around while this is happening because they're frightened. And then beyond the electrified bath, they go onto a throat-slitting machine. So there's this rotating a blade that their necks are meant to be dragged across. But, of course, because of them thrashing around in fear, their necks often would miss that step. And that's unfortunate, because the next step was a scalding hot water bath for defeathering. And so they would be experiencing that while fully conscious. And so I was absolutely shocked that this is this legal standard practice. And honestly, it was my fault for not, you know, looking. There were all obviously YouTube videos out there that I could have found while I was, you know, buying these chickens in the grocery store and not thinking about this. And so seeing this expose on the news prompted me to look up Mercy for Animals on the internet, who I'd never heard of before, and call them and thank them and say, I'm going vegetarian. And now that reminds me of those people I spoke about earlier, where they proudly say, I'm vegetarian, and the job is done. And I expected the same response from them, going, oh, great, you're vegetarian. But the person on the other end of the phone took me a step further, which I really appreciated. And they said, why don't you go vegan? Because a vegetarian diet contributes to a lot of animal cruelty. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I thought cows just had to be milked. That was a certain breed of cows that were just always full of milk. I mean, what a stupid thing to think. But that's what I thought. And that's what a lot of people think. And, you know, the brown cows were the meat cows. Like, that's literally what I thought. And I thought chickens just laid eggs anyways, and it's no big deal. I never thought about what a chicken egg was. And obviously it's their menstrual cycle. Like, it's gross, right? So I'm thinking, what's the harm in having these secretions? And I never really thought about the way that these animals live day to day, as you explained earlier. And so this person on the other end of the phone with Mercy for Animals explained that veal comes from the dairy industry. And again, my mind was blown. I just never thought about that. Why would there be an industry that uses baby animals to sell? It would be more profitable to grow them and sell them for more meat, but they're a byproduct of the dairy industry. The mother has to have a baby to produce the milk, and the males are not going to produce milk, so that's the byproduct. I never would have pieced that together on my own. And that's, I mean, I'm embarrassed to say it, but most people are kind of feeling the same way. And so the reason I bring up this story is because initially you and I met over a vegan activist who works for an animal rights organization that promotes vegetarianism because he thinks that people are going to be intimidated by veganism. But here's an example where somebody pushed my thinking a little further and used my own stated values that I care about animals and I don't want animal cruelty to be supported by me. And they use that to say, if you do feel this way, then you've got to go further than what you just said you're going to do by going vegetarian. And it worked. And it takes someone who is not going to be defensive and who is really honest with themselves in order to take that information further and put it into action. And so I think, and I'm sure you do too, that when we're doing outreach and we give somebody that opportunity to use their stated values, I care about animals, I'm opposed to animal cruelty, and to take it further and actually have more authenticity in what they say they're going to do and what they do, we're giving them credit. We're thinking, I think you're intelligent enough to understand what I'm going to explain to you. And I think you're honest and humble enough with yourself that you're not going to have an emotional defensive hissy fit at me for making you wrong. And instead, you're going to go, thanks for giving me new information that I didn't know before that I can now act on and transform my practices.
Yeah, it's a sign of respect.
I see it that way. However, in reality, we do deal with the majority of the public being defensive and acting as though we're making them wrong. And this is where I believe the cartoons Vegan Sidekick were born. And do you know Vegan Sidekick cartoons, Brian?
I've heard of them, but I'm really not familiar with the content.
Okay, I wish this wasn't a radio show right now so I could just show this. But I will post up on our website, animalvoices.org, so people know what I'm talking about. Vegan Sidekick cartoons are created by a fellow from England. And it's always a scene of a vegan speaking calmly and rationally, giving factual information to someone who's not vegan. And the person that they're talking to becomes ridiculously defensive and irrational. And it's just funny because if you've done any activism at all, you can look up Vegan Sidekick cartoons and go, yep, I've been there. And it's really frustrating.
Sure.
I'm going to change your life. I'm going to send you the link for vegansidekick.com. You'll love it.
Okay, perfect. I'm always looking for good content.
Yeah. So do you have any examples in your own life where you pushed the vegan message over the vegetarian baby step method and you were met with a positive reaction?
Yeah. I've got two good examples for you. So the first one, some of my first activism that I ever really did was manning pay-per-view tents at vegan festivals. And I think that there's something very, very powerful about a video. I'm not sure exactly what it is. Maybe it's the kinesthesia of it. Maybe it's the audio, hearing the screaming and so forth. But video really affects people and really lets people see and understand something that is really difficult to describe using the parameters of just straight up language. And when I was able to show people what really went on in factory farms, then there was some real nexus of understanding between us. I was able to say, look, this is what I'm talking about here. This is what you see in front of you. This is where these animal products come from. And when we have that nexus of understanding, then have a real conversation, and we can say, listen, you know, there isn't any way that you can pay somebody to do this, just because you don't feel like eating something else, and that be okay. There's no way that makes any ethical sense. And in those instances, at that pay-per-view time, when we had that nexus of understanding, I got the point across, I think, probably better than I ever had before. And that's why I really push my activism doing film screenings of Earthlings and Dominion, because I think that it allows us to establish that understanding and have that have those conversations, because for us to be ethically consistent. Because if we make these claims, if we know what we know about dairy farming, how prevalent it is, what really goes on in there, and we make the correct ethical judgment that it isn't okay in any way, shape, or form to contribute to it, but we try to get people on our side by being cool about it and being, you know, like, hey, everybody's on a journey, man. Take your baby steps. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. Then we're being ethically dishonest, because we don't really believe that. And I think that we need to be honest in order to be seen among those that we're trying to influence, to be seen that we're ethically consistent, that we practice what we preach, and that we don't water down our message just to look cooler or more approachable, that we have the respect for the people that we talk to not lie to them, to not tell them that something is okay when it isn't, or to try to look cool. It's a little dishonest to try to water down that kind of a message by just to try to be more approachable. And the second example I have for you is myself. Like I told you at the beginning of the program, I was a vegetarian for about a year before I went vegan. And I was a vegetarian because I just didn't understand what the egg and dairy industry was all about. I mean, I think Jen, you and I both sort of had the same intellectual experience prior to having the conversation that you had with that person at Mercy for Animals, that, you know, I had all sorts of misconceptions about, the necessity to milk dairy cows, or that, oh, chickens just need to lay eggs anyway. And I'm sure a lot of it was cognitive dissonance, but a lot of it was just that I really just didn't know. And a lot of the material that was available to me at that time, or that I, you know, just happened to, by chance, look up, the material that I found was all very apologetic. It was all very, you know, everybody's on a journey, you, man. It was all the cool vegan type of stuff. And after I really saw what was going on, and I really started to understand that no, contributing to the egg and dairy industries is not an ethically acceptable choice in any way, shape, or form, I really strongly wish that somebody had just told me. Because if somebody had just told me, you know, I would have gone vegan a lot sooner. And I mean, I know a lot of that is my own fault for not living it up myself, but I'm not really so different from everybody else, you know. I have the information that's available to me, and I know the information that I know because I've taken the time to look it up, and because I, you know, hang out with people that show me the information that I'm looking for. But not everybody is in that kind of a mode where that's what they're looking at. And I think that's our job. I think it's our job to be honest with people and tell them the hard truths about the world that they live in and the industrial machine that our society is caught up in, and that the animals of this world are subjected to. I think that's our job, and I think we need to take it seriously.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of that, when you said, if I'd known sooner, I would have gone vegan sooner, I had a friend who was vegetarian since we were in grade 9, and vegan since, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago. And like you said, I could have looked these things up myself and learned on my own. But honestly, had she explained to me in detail what was wrong with eggs and dairy, for example, of course I understood why meat was cruel. But I didn't understand the eggs and the dairy. And she never once elaborated on her reasons for not consuming them because she doesn't like controversy. But that wouldn't have been a controversial conversation. And it's insulting to assume that your friend is going to react in that way and therefore not make that a conversation topic when you're sharing so many meals with them and so much time with them, right?
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it, if you're both friends, I mean, any of my friends, even if they believe things that I really strongly disagree with, I still want to know because they're my friend and I want to know them and I want to understand them. So I don't think that we need to be so timid about it. I think that, you know, I think we need to treat our friends like our friends.
But on the other hand, I also lost a best friend that I've known since grade 8 because when I went vegan and I started to tell her what I was learning about these industries, first of all, she refused to watch any of the undercover videos that I was showing her that were made in Canada by my friend who's an undercover investigator. And secondly, she would argue about the validity of the facts that I was trying to present to her, which were basically shown in these videos, which she was refusing to watch. So then I resorted to just saying it, and she just was arguing with me. And I just thought, you know, that's the final straw. I can't be friends with someone anymore who is that illogical and who lacks compassion. And ironically, she was my best friend because of those two traits. I thought she was the most compassionate, logical person in my life. And a lot of us have stories of losing our friendships and even, you know, close relationships with family members over these kinds of issues when we go vegan.
I think most very serious animal rights advocates have at least one story like that.
And I think
it's indicative of a real sickness in our society because, I mean, just like you were saying, your friend, up until you had those arguments with your friend, you had known your friend to be a very compassionate and smart person, but you know, once the concept of animal rights came up, oh, that completely went out the window. And I don't think that, like, I think that most activists have seen exactly that otherwise wonderful, compassionate, caring people who, at least as far as dogs and cats and so forth are concerned, love animals, and are also very smart and logical, all of a sudden all that just goes out the window when, you know, you bring up the topic of veganism or animal rights. And that's a society-wide problem. That's a paradigm problem. And that's unfortunately something that on an individual level we can run into a lot of trouble with our relationships. But hopefully I think that paradigm starts to change and people start to open themselves up to this idea, this paradigm, so that, you know, our future conversations won't have to be so volatile, you know?
Yeah. And in this day and age with climate change and all the very serious issues that we're dealing with as a group, humanity, It's never been more important to put the ego aside and to be able to obtain real facts and make real transformation in our lives based on what may be new information for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Something that really concerns me, actually, about the modern environmental movement is that it really appears to me to be a big, big appeal to convenience and finger-pointing. Most environmental campaigns or activism, not really activism, but the sort of individual efforts really tend to be more centered around blaming politicians for the problems of the world, which has merit in and of itself because that is definitely true. But what I see is very, very little effort to actually look inward and ask, what am I doing to contribute to the climate change? I think that people have the default position that they're the ones who are really in the right, and if only everybody else could just see things the way that they do, then everything would be great. But as soon as you start to consider actually making real personal sacrifices, a real personal change, rather, in order to combat these issues, then the game is somehow changed. I think the plastic straws campaign that has been going around is a pretty good example that everybody's kind of patting themselves on the back for going without a plastic straw and a Starbucks cup. But if you look at the actual composition by mass of the garbage pile in the ocean, plastic straws account for about 0.03% of that garbage. But you know what comprises about 46% of that garbage? Commercial fishing nets.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen hardly any campaigns to end commercial fishing or to stop eating fish as a means of combating the garbage piles in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I really think it's all kind of a big distraction. I think that, you know, we don't have time to be tiptoeing around this issue. We need to really take responsibility for our actions here, like adults.
Exactly. Well, that's all the time we have for today, Brian, but that was a really interesting discussion, and I hope that we've been able to transform some hearts and minds today. Again, you're just so eloquent when you speak about these issues. I really appreciate you giving us some time, and I'd like to have you on again in regards to other issues such as the greyhound racing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you, Jen. I appreciate being on your show.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks again. Take care.
You have been listening to Vancouver Co-op Radio Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. Today's show is brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy because on our big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. And we here at Animal Voices, we want to connect with you online. Please go to animalvoices.org where you can stream all of our shows or download past shows as podcasts. We're also on iTunes. You can check us out on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And I'm going to be starting an Instagram one day soon, so you can check on that soon. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Please tune in to next week's show, Friday, September the 7th. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.